From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Well, in New Hampshire tonight, Clinton edges Obama, McCain bests Romney. You want any more information on that? Well, you know where you can go. Next hour, Joe Nickel joins us. His various paranormal investigations into human combustion and the Shroud of Turin, and some other stories. But first, more than 75 passengers returning from Tel Aviv were placed in quarantine in Canada, Pearson Airport tonight, after a number of travelers simply fell ill. The plane, an Air Canada flight 085 from Tel Aviv, landed just after 9 o'clock this evening, carrying 201 passengers. An Air Canada representative said that over the course of the flight, three people traveling with an organized group fell ill with flu-like symptoms. In Des Moines, Iowa, a man has been charged with the stabbing and strangulation murder of his two stepdaughters in what police are calling a spell gone bad in the family's Sioux City, Iowa home. Lawrence Douglas Harris Sr. was charged with two counts of first-degree murder. A police spokesman said he was performing some strange ritual and told the officers that he cast a spell that had gone bad. In just a moment, Isaac Bonowitz joins us talking about rituals and witchcraft right here on Coast to Coast. In Georgia, a missing hiker found only after a drifter accused of murdering her took authorities to her body, apparently had died of a blunt force trauma to the head and then was decapitated after her death. Authorities have arrested a 61-year-old man. They reached an agreement with him. Prosecutors will not seek the death penalty. My God. Russia's leading the race to complete a manned mission to Mars and could land a Russian on the red planet by 2025. On the line with us now, Richard C. Hoagland, head of the EnterpriseMission.com. Richard, they're going to beat us there?
We're in a race, George, not just between us and the former Soviet Union, but remember China, Japan, India, the European Union, Germany, Brazil. We are in a race, a real space race, and I just find this announcement coming on the night of the New Hampshire primary, where they're picking some very remarkable candidates in terms of people looking forward to the future, that these two things are happening, quote, coincidentally, from my friend George, who doesn't believe in coincidence.
That's right.
And remember, I've been talking about our work as a campaign. The coincidence here is that we hold a national press conference in Washington in October. We have a tremendous ascendancy of Russian interest. Four major networks, the equivalent of CNN talking to us for 3 hours over there, a camera crew from NTV, the largest Russian commercial network flying all the way from Moscow to Albuquerque to sit here with me and Ken Johnson for, you know, 2 days to discuss. And then a few weeks after that, the head of the Space Research Institute in Moscow, Lev Zeloni, says to Interfax today that they're in a race to Mars, they're going to win, and they're ahead. And you don't think that I think that maybe there are monuments on Mars at the end of that race?
Well, let me tell you something, Richard. The fact that you've got this entree now to some of these Russian media, they may get there first and give you the information you've been looking for so many years.
Well, this is when I get the distinct feeling that Putin is orchestrating something remarkable in a new race with the West for not something trivial, not something stupid like prestige, but for the real payoff, the real goal, the real prize at the end of the race. And tonight, coincident with the New Hampshire primary, he's basically shooting the shooting gun and saying, we're off to the races, either get, you know, be there or be square.
Hey, by the way, thanks for the Christmas present. I didn't have a chance to talk. I went on vacation right after that.
Have you seen it?
Yes, you did a great job. It's the DVD, of course, of your press conference at the Washington Press Club.
Unedited, unexpurgated, and what you see is what you get. What do you think of the content? Do you think we made our case?
I think you hit a home run, my friend.
Fantastic.
It's all tied into Dark Mission. How's that still out there?
With Mike Barra, I've got a New York Times bestseller. We're in a campaign for these incredible avant-garde ideas. We're being nudged big time tonight by the Russians saying this is a race. And it's a race for, as Obama's saying, humankind, history, the future, you know, where we're going as opposed to where we've been. So I'm not surprised that, you know, we connected with the press conference. What I'm intrigued with is, as all get out, is that we're number one, you know, in space science, in astronomy, in several of the categories on Amazon, and we've been on the New York Times bestseller list now for weeks, and it means that real people are connecting with our message, our campaign to get honesty in something really important, which is the future of civilization being held in check by NASA.
Yeah, that's Richard C. Hoagland, head of the Enterprise Mission.com. I'm going to give a toll-free number at the half this hour for some of you who might want to pick up Richard's DVD. Just a great job. DarkMission.com, and of course his website, EnterpriseMission.com. He works around the clock for us yeoman's work. Richard, thank you so much. Producing biofuels from a fast-growing grass delivers vast savings of carbon dioxide emissions compared with petrol, according to a large study. A team of U.S. researchers found that switchgrass-derived ethanol produced 540% more energy than was required to manufacture the fuel. That's huge, by the way. 1 acre of grassland could, on the average, deliver 320 barrels of bioethanol. They publish all this in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Trying to sell your house? Contracts to sell existing homes fell in November, and they say there could be darker days ahead for home values, which are expected to post their biggest decline on record this quarter, as a full-year rebound in prices now isn't expected until 2009. If you're looking to buy a house, this is a great time to go shopping. A Romanian man was rushed to the hospital after finding a dead mouse in his bottle of beer. He had food poisoning. He simply said, "I opened the bottle, took a few gulps. The taste was very strange, and when I looked closer, I noticed the mouse floating in my beer." Oh, how would you like that to happen to you? On the coasttocoastam.com website, take a look at the feature story that our webmaster Lex has posted. A California man, nicknamed Papa Smurf, has revealed how he accidentally turned his skin permanently blue. He suffered from a stress-related dermatitis after his father's death and decided to treat himself with the homemade, it's called colloidal silver. It's an old medicine widely used before penicillin. Well, it may have cured his dermatitis, but it turned him blue. You'll see him up there on the coasttocoastam.com website. People who adopt four principles for a healthy lifestyle can add 14 years to their lives, according to a new study. Researchers found that not smoking, taking exercise, drinking in moderation, and eating 5 servings of fruit and vegetables a day can have a huge impact on your life expectancy. They say smoking had the biggest single impact on people's health, with smokers 77% more likely to have died during the study. Sad news for those of you who are in the paranormal field. Sarah Estep, one of the world's leading EVP researchers and founder of the American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena, has died after a 2-week illness. On the line with us now, Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Rosemary, you knew all about Sarah.
She was a friend of mine, George, and I respected her highly. Everybody who's in the paranormal investigation field owes a debt to her for her work in EVP. She really put it on the map. The AAEVP is a leading international research organization. She developed the classification of voices for evaluating clarity and whether or not it could be, you know, reliable data. She recorded 25,000 voices herself over the course of her career. It's just an amazing legacy that she's left us with.
I got to tell you, Rosemary, if EVPs are real, and they sure sound pretty uncanny to me, maybe now with Sarah going on to the other side, she might become one of them herself.
I think she will, because I know that she would want to communicate, and she's a very determined lady. In fact, I'm going to be coordinating some experiments with some other people who have boxes, the radio sweep boxes,
sure,
like Frank's box and the mini box. We'll be coordinating some experiments to see if we can communicate with her.
All right, very good. Rosemary, thank you so much.
Thank you, George.
Sarah Estep is no longer with us, 81 years old. She's gone to the other side. But you know what? She may still be doing investigations over there. In a moment, Isaac Bonowitz joins us. We're going to talk about witchcraft and rituals. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, here he is now. Isaac Bonowitz is one of North America's leading experts on ancient and modern Druidism, witchcraft, magic, and the occult, and the rapidly growing Earth Religions movement, a practicing neo-pagan priest, scholar, teacher, and polytheologian for more than 35 years. He has coined much of the vocabulary and articulated so many of the issues that have shaped the rapidly growing neo-pagan movement in the United States. He's our guest this hour on Coast to Coast. Isaac, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
My pleasure. This was a bizarre story of the deaths of these two young girls to the hands of someone who was practicing some kind of ritual, claiming that a spell went bad.
Well, you know, the story is a great deal vaguer than I'm hearing people repeat it. I've looked at the report in the Sioux City newspaper. The police said the father had been performing some strange ritual, and claimed that, or the stepfather rather, and the police said that the stepfather said that he was casting a spell that had gone bad, and that the spell could have had severe consequences. Mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't sound like any spell that I'm familiar with. It sounds a great deal more like the stories you hear, the really awful stories at least once or twice a year about Christian children dying when their fundamentalist Christian parents are doing an exorcism on them, you know, trying to beat the devil out of them.
Yep.
That sort of a thing.
Yep.
The word witchcraft isn't in the original newspaper stories.
No, it is not.
No, it was put into the stories by people making comments on the newspaper's blog. And, of course, this upset a lot of modern witches who call themselves Wiccans because, of course, this sort of thing has absolutely nothing to do with modern-day, you know, Wiccan belief or practice.
And I've pointed out on this program, Isaac, that Wiccans believe in God. They believe in a male-female version of God, don't they?
Well, they believe in both a god and a goddess.
Yeah.
Now, some denominations of Wicca believe that these are two sides of the same deity. Okay, others believe they're two independent deities. Some Wiccans only believe in a goddess and don't believe in a god. But what makes it even more complicated is that regardless of which of the two divine genders they focus on, every goddess is seen as a face or an aspect of a supreme goddess, and every god is seen as a face or an aspect of a supreme god, the ones they refer to when they see, say, the goddess or the god. So the idea is that you can worship the god or the goddess under any name of any god or goddess who's ever been worshipped in the world, because they're all, it's like yin and yang. They're all faces and aspects of the universal gender polarity.
You've written a book on the real magic, Isaac, and, you know, and you're a pretty darn good expert on this subject. You've been doing it for a very long, long time. Is there a difference, because so many people are confused, with those people who are evil, who practice, let's say, satanic worshiping, as opposed to those who believe that they are merely witches? I mean, we've got a great woman by the name of Evelyn Paglini who comes on the program, mm-hmm. claims that she's a fun white witch. She's great mm-hmm. at prophecy mm-hmm. and predictions. Mm-hmm. Is there a difference between these evil worshipers and these others?
Is there a difference between doctors who are good people and doctors who are bad people?
Yes and no.
They're all doctors.
They're all doctors. There's the similarity right there.
Right. The problem is that the word witch has had a lot of different meanings over the last 1,500 years. Okay? The original use of the word witch back in Anglo-Saxon times when it was Wicca was somebody you suspected of using magic for bad purposes. During the Renaissance period, the Catholic and Protestant churches redefined witch to mean somebody who belonged to a secret underground religion of devil worship.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay?
And that's how it started.
That's how it started. Then when nobody believed in that sort of nonsense anymore, the word witch was associated with crazy old women.
And then, in the middle of the 20th century, a man named Gerald Gardner, along with some friends, synthesized a brand new religion that he called the Craft, or Wicca with a single C. And this eventually became the modern religion of neo-pagan witchcraft. And in his case, he could have called his religion anything. He could have just called it New Paganism or Revivalist Greco-Roman religion. But he figured if he called the people in his new religion witches, that he'd get more publicity in the British tabloid press.
And he probably did.
Oh, he did. He did a great deal. I don't know. Have you ever seen the British tabloids? They kind of make the National Enquirer look like the New York Times.
Or the Weekly Reader that we used to read in school.
Yeah, exactly. The British tabloid press was extremely lurid back 50, 60 years ago, and calling his new religion witchcraft and the members of his new religion witches sold a lot of papers and got him a lot of publicity and enabled him to spread his idea very, very rapidly.
Okay, the so-called black mass that we've always considered to be evil, is that the case? I mean, is this being done by people who are out there to, you know, chop off the ear of somebody? I mean, what's going on there?
Okay, I mentioned this in my book, Bonowitz's Essential Guide to Witches and Witchcraft, that the black mass was originally invented by the Roman Catholics. The black mass was originally a mass for the dead because the priest would wear a black ceremonial robe called the, not the surplus, not the orb.
Well, we know what they're called in Arabic. They're
I can't remember it anymore, but there's an overlying.
But it's a black robe.
He would wear a black chasuble. That's the word. The over cape, the chasuble over his robes underneath, when he said a mass for the dead. That's perfectly normal. They still do it today. But at some point early in church history, somebody came up with the bright idea of making a donation to the church to have them say a mass for the dead for somebody who hadn't died yet.
Mm-hmm.
Thus turning what is supposed to be a blessing into a curse.
I see.
Now, that went on for centuries, people doing that. During the period in Europe, in France, just before the Revolution in the early 1700s, there were a lot of very bored rich people, like there always are. And some people made money throwing wild parties for bored, rich nobility.
Eyes wide shut?
Something like that.
All right.
Essentially equivalent to the S&M dungeon parties that modern-day kinky rich people will organize. And somebody got the idea that it would be fun to do a blasphemous version of a regular mass, exactly the same way that the church had invented supposed satanic witches during the witch hunts as having done. So first there were the black masses that the church did that were legitimate masses for the dead. Then there were the ones that were turned into curses by not very nice Catholics. Then there were the imaginary black masses that the inquisitors, who were busy killing so-called witches, invented out of thin air as being what the evil Satan worshippers must obviously be doing, because naturally everything they would do would be the church, whatever the church does, upside down and backwards. Actually, there's a lot of modern Satanists who still take the same approach. Anything, you know, do what the Catholic Church used to do, only do it backwards. And then people started doing it, you know, centuries after the witch trials were over. People started doing it for kink, you know, for the sake of a thrill.
Right.
And then off and on over the years, various people, including modern Satanists, have done variations on what they thought the black mass was. It's never been very popular. It's never been very common. But it's been something that people who are hostile to other religions leap on immediately.
Now,
we have no evidence that a black mass of any sort was going on in Sioux City.
No, we don't.
I do not know of any spells that involve killing your own children. In fact, the only one I've ever heard of is the story of Abraham and Isaac in the Bible.
Right.
and that one gets stopped halfway through.
Well, to me, this guy sounds like he's just insane. He's just
He sounds like a lunatic.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, it's true that there are many religions in the world that practice animal sacrifice, because in rural cultures, if you want to give something...
You hear the music, Isaac?
I sure do.
Well, that's okay. That means we'll be right back with you, okay? Isaac Bonowitz, our guest. First time he's been on Coast to Coast. We're going to open up the phone lines, too, just for you. Hey, I promised you when we had Richard C. Hoagland on, I'd give you his toll-free number if you want to pick up his incredible DVD of that Washington News Conference, where he's talking about NASA and space. Really very, very well done. The toll-free number is 877-345-6222. That's 1-877-345-6222, or you can go to darkmission.net or enterprisemission.com for Richard C. Hoagland. And we're with Isaac Bonowitz. His website is neopagan.net, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Isaac, how much of this is related to negativity, positive energy flow of individuals, these things?
Oh, boy, it almost all is. Energy is, as you know, of course, because of the work that you do with this show, energy is a very complicated topic. My wife Phaedra and I wrote a book called Real Energy, in which we looked at chi and ki and mana and prana and all the different names people use for psychic or magical energy, and tried to connect it up with what physicists know about energy and how much of this stuff is the same thing under different names. And an awful lot of it is the same thing under different names. But, you know, energy itself is never negative or positive in a moral or ethical sense. It's what people do with energy that can be negative or positive. And every system of technology, whether you're talking about physical technology or psychic technology, is capable of being used for bad things by bad people or just by stupid people.
Right.
We actually really know very little about what happened in Sioux City, Iowa. A lot of people are getting very excited when we have almost nothing in the way of solid information other than secondhand information from a police officer who may or may not know anything at all about magic and the occult and, you know, unusual religions. I mean, they say it's a ritual killing. Could the man have been involved in Santeria? Well, Santeria doesn't involve killing humans. They haven't killed anybody in a Santeria ritual in 100 years.
And what I couldn't understand, Isaac, is the verbiage of a spell gone bad. I mean,
yeah, that's very strange.
Yes. How does a spell gone bad equate into killing two kids?
I have no idea. Okay? it's bizarre. Now, like I started to say before the break, human beings have done animal sacrifice and even human sacrifice in many religions over the centuries. If you look back in the early history of Judaism, the story of Abraham and Isaac is the story of human sacrifice and why it, and how it got abandoned. To a certain extent, you can look at jihads and crusades and the Inquisition as having been human sacrifices. But in the original sense where people were making sacrifices of their farm animals, it was because they were giving up something valuable to the gods they worshipped.
It was an offering.
Yes. Now, if you live on a farm, twisting a chicken's neck and throwing it on an altar to offer to the local god of chickens, the local fertility deities, mm-hmm. the deities of agriculture, that makes perfect sense. Okay, if you don't live on a farm, twisting a chicken's neck and throwing it on an altar is a little weird.
It's a little weird. That's
okay,
right.
I remember many years ago when I was a young man, I was dating a girl who lived out on a farm. And her father thought that the best way to check out this young man who was dating his daughter was to ask me to come out and help him chop the head off a couple of chickens for lunch, which I did. But I was grossed out by it because I hadn't grown up with the fact that chickens are food. You know, they're running around, and then 10 minutes later, you're chopping the neck off, Half an hour later, we had the best chicken dinner I had ever had in my life.
I'm not sure I would have
eaten that.
That's
fresh chicken.
Yeah, it sure is.
But the point is, people in primitive cultures, in earlier historical cultures, would sacrifice animals because they were giving up something valuable. Today, people put money into the offering plate. It's essentially the same thing, and it's a lot cleaner, and it's not so hard on, you know, the laundry bill. So I can understand people doing animal sacrifices in rituals if they're doing the sort of ritual that is connected to a religion that is still based, as most of the Afro-diasporic religions are, in rural culture, whether you're talking about Haiti or Cuba or Brazil. Most those religions are based on a rural worldview.
We're going to take some calls here, Isaac, but is it not true that most of the people then who are out there performing what they say are rituals are whacked out lunatics?
Well, no, because there's a whole lot of...
I mean, rituals to hurt and harm people.
Oh, yeah, those people are crazy.
Yeah.
That's a problem. And, of course, one crazy person saying, oh, I did it because I am a fill-in-the-blank, a witch or a druid or a Unitarian or whatever else it is they decide to claim that they are, that will immediately be lifted up and used as a sledgehammer to smash people who belong to other religions. Oh, look, there's this person here who says he's a member of your religion, and they did a bad thing. So, therefore, all the people in your religion are bad people.
To the phones we go. Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Where are you calling from?
Tucson, Arizona.
Okay, sir. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I have a question that's, first, Georgia, I really appreciate you. And I've listened to you for quite a few years now, and you do a great job there.
Oh, thank you.
What I'd like to ask the guest is, my mother is already passed away. I'm retired now, and my mother passed away a couple of years ago, and we played the Ouija board and all. And it actually predicted 2-3 months by my dad's name, first name, which I won't give, and it actually predicted his age, 32, and car. And he ended up going to the garage, and he was a captain in the Air Force, and Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and it ended up the jack slipped, and a lug nut rolled under the car. He went over to get it. Jack slipped, and the car fell on him. It killed him. But my question is, what if you want to contact somebody on the other side? I mean, do you have a biblical right to do that? Or are you actually playing in black magic or something?
Okay.
And can you even pray to them and talk to them?
That's a good question, Isaac. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Well, first you have to understand that I'm not a Christian. I haven't been a Christian since I gave up being a Catholic when I was 13. So biblical prohibitions against contacting the dead, you know, don't necessarily mean that much to me. I will point out, however, that the Bible has examples of people doing that that are both positive and negative examples. So it depends on which part of the Bible you want to read as to whether or not it's a forbidden activity. Frankly, everybody talks to the dead. People, you know, put pictures of their parents and their grandparents and their great-grandparents up on the mantelpiece.
Sure.
And lots of them, you know, will talk to them. They don't expect to get an answer, but they'll talk to the pictures because that's a psychological connection. I do want to say this about Ouija boards before we go further into talking to the dead, however. Ouija boards are primarily a way of getting in contact with the subconscious minds of the people who are there using the Ouija board. Once in a while, they might contact something outside. Most of the time, they'll contact whatever is in the subconscious minds of the people using it. And our subconscious minds can be pretty messy places, and you can't necessarily trust the information you get out of a Ouija board. On the other hand, most human psychic talents work via the subconscious mind. So if you're going to get an accurate prediction about something or information about something that's going on, say, 1,000 miles away, it'll be through the subconscious mind, and the Ouija board can be a tool that would allow that to happen. I just always say take everything with several grains of salt when you're working with the Ouija boards. I would say if you want to talk to your father, you're much better off to find a well-trained professional medium who's recommended, somebody who's been trained with the Spiritualist Church or some other psychic training organization that's been around for a few years, and who isn't going to charge you an arm, a leg, and a couple of other parts of your anatomy to make a simple communication for you.
Okay, very good. Thanks.
People in many religions talk to the dead and consider it perfectly acceptable and perfectly ethical to do.
And it's been happening since the beginning of time. West of the Rockies, you're up with us. Hi there.
How you doing?
We are well.
This is Sam from San Francisco. I was wondering if the guest has ever heard of this ritual that's called the cremation of care that's done at the Bohemian Grove. We're in front of the large statue, Moloch, owl, or whatever. What does that represent?
I like that.
I have heard many, many, many lurid and contradictory stories about the ritual at the Bohemian Grove. Here's the problem with conspiracy theories, and I know the people who listen to this show just love conspiracy theories, and I love them too, but here's the problem. You don't need conspiracies when you have grapevines. When you have people who normally talk to certain people but not to other people, sooner or later they're going to conspire. But it's so easy to leap from one conspiracy theory to a slightly similar connected one, to another one that's slightly similar, to another one, and suddenly you find that you've gone from something that was sane and rational to something that is utterly lunatic.
But what, Isaac, are grown men doing out there in the woods, playing the role of whatever they do, with a huge owl structure, doing these bizarre things?
Well, the owl is a very old symbol for Athena, who is a goddess of wisdom. Now, I have no idea why the movers and shakers of the world, the members of the power elite, would want to worship the goddess Athena. I can say, though, that grown men and grown women have a need for ritual. Ritual is an art form. It's a natural art form.
Is it healthy?
Sure it is. Just as some people can't go through life without singing or without painting or drawing or without writing bad poetry, it's like any other art form. It's a natural activity that human beings have been engaged in for as long as we've been human beings, no matter how many 100,000 years you want to go back on that. Ritual itself is neither, you know, sane nor insane, good nor evil, high quality or low quality, except to the people who are participating in it. Ritual is a complicated topic. I just released a book called Neo-Pagan Rites, which is a book about how to do public religious rituals, liturgies. Churches do ritual all the time, even the ones who pride themselves on, no, we don't have a ritual. We just do the same thing every Sunday morning when we get together, and if you try to change it, they'll really be mad at you. A ritual is a psychodrama, a multimedia psychodrama that's designed to produce particular altered states of consciousness within the participants so that they can make spiritual, psychic, magical connections with the beings or with the concepts that they want to connect with. There are lots and lots of good rituals. Were you in the Boy Scouts or the Cub Scouts?
I was.
Lots of rituals, which most of which were originally stolen from badly garbled Native American rituals.
But I don't do it as a 57-year-old man now going out into the woods with
you
owls.
You would if you were a scoutmaster.
Well,
you'd be leading the younger scouts in those same rituals. What about Freemasons? Freemasons do rituals every week.
Yes, they do.
And people who go to Catholic Church do rituals every week. And people who go to Baptist Church do rituals every week. And the snake handlers in Appalachia do rituals every week.
I just think it's weird, Isaac, that power elite would go and do these things.
Look, anything that can alter people's state of consciousness can put them into a state where they are capable of being imprinted with particular ideas and concepts.
That's
why religions use ritual. Okay? And again, like any other form of power, it can be used for good or evil. Mostly the power elite uses it for evil.
True. First time caller line. You're up with Isaac Bonowitz on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing? This is Sean from California.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, I had two quick questions for the guest.
Okay. One at a time in case we run out of time. Go ahead.
First one is, what time period did actual magicians come about where they actually put on, you know, like a magic show with, you know, sleight of hand? And
Okay, back in the caves.
Okay, the second question was, do you know of any past or modern day that are actual magicians that don't just use sleight of hands, that you feel actual use magical powers?
True magic.
Oh, yeah. I've met hundreds of them. The problem is that talking about really spectacular magical events, like waving your hand and having a thunderstorm happen, is much more exciting than talking about somebody working for several days to put themselves into a position where they can psychically shift a whole bunch of air molecules in a particular way and produce a rainstorm that looks like it just coincidentally happened when they wanted it to happen. The latter is how real magic operates 999 times out of 1,000. It's not as much fun to talk about, and it certainly doesn't make movies that are anywhere near as exciting as, you know, the fairy tale version of magic.
Well, it is true. Exorcisms are better to talk about on radio than something else. Same kind of thing. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. Thanks.
Hey, to your guest, I've been a practicing witch for 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
What kind? Gardenerian.
Okay.
The fairy Wiccas is the gods and the goddesses that I choose to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the Celtic Bronze Age heroes. My question is, a lot of people here in the pagan community in Colorado that I've dealt with, when I first started practicing magic, I started working with the goddess Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a police officer now, and so I've always had kind of a warrior background.
Yes.
And I came forward to her is not knowing very much and kind of a novice and so forth. And so I came with a hand of friendship, asking for friendship, you know, needing a spiritual guide to help me through the process of seeking and learning. And a lot of people don't believe that I actually contacted the individual person that lived during the Bronze Age. They think that I've tapped into an energy. But from my experience of working with her, she's very angelic and very aggressive at showing her powers. Do you believe in your experience that it is possible to communicate with an individual goddess?
All right, in 30 seconds.
Okay. Yes, it is possible. Gods and goddesses can be many different things and many different levels of reality, including beings who appear to you and communicate with you in a direct fashion. You can't expect other people to understand or to accept your personal spiritual experience any more than you can understand or accept their personal experiences, because you had it and they didn't, and vice versa.
Isaac, I want to thank you for being on the program, and we can get more information on your website about you.
You certainly can at www.neopagan.net.
You got it. Up next, Joe Nickel joins us. He's a member of the Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal. He's next.